Before anyone thought of growing cannabis there, the north coast of California was famous for something else green, redwood trees. They are the tallest trees on Earth and grow to massive dimensions in optimum conditions. They also make nice picnic tables and decking, so there's always a demand for the trees outside the forest. Many groves of redwoods are now protected, and a recent project seeks to add some velocity to the protection. That is the Redwoods Rising Project. We have two guests to tell us about it. Emily Burns is the director of science for the Save the Redwoods League. Hi, Emily.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure enough. Jay Chamberlain's with us as well. He's the chief of the Natural Resources Division at California State Parks, one of the partners in the project. Hi, Jay.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Thanks for joining us. So, Emily, let's start with you. I mean, how does Redwoods Rising differ from the basic mission of the Save the Redwoods League?
Well, Redwoods Rising is right at the core of what Save the Redwoods wants to do. We want to make sure that redwood forests are around for many, many generations. And to do that, we really need to heal the damaged landscapes and help previously logged forests return to the grandeur of old growth.
So, Jay, can you give us some numbers on the historic range of redwoods and how much of it got logged and what is protected now?
Well, I'll take a crack at it, but Emily and her and Save the Redwoods League has also done some really cutting-edge recent research on it. But the original range of the redwood landscape across California was about 2.2 million acres. But today, as far as I know, it's about just 1.6 million acres left, and about 113,000 of that is old growth.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is not a huge amount of what was once old-growth redwood across the state of California.
That's right. I'm sorry. About 5% of the original range is my understanding. Emily, did you have better numbers on that?
No, that's absolutely right. And only 22% of the range is protected in parks and reserves. So we have a lot of opportunity within that protected landscape to do the best we can for redwood forests and then eventually expand beyond those borders.
And are there any good numbers on how much growth there's been, Emily, since the protection efforts began?
Well, What we do know is that in some places, the recovery of the original forests that were logged around the gold rush, those forests now are more than 150 years old. Those are the best examples we have of that mature second growth. And those forests have actually started to reach incredible heights. Recent research from Humboldt State University shows that our oldest mature second growth forests have the same number of leaves, total leaf area, as nearby old growth forests. So they have incredible growth potential, but their biomass is still way under only 20% of old growth. And that's really the best of the second growth forests that we have. Much of the logged forest is much younger, and the stands are really choked with saplings growing closely together. And it's those dense stands that are not growing quickly that we want to go in and help accelerate the growth through Redwoods Rising and this restoration effort.
All right, this is a really interesting place to divide up the concept of old growth from old trees, because an old growth forest has certain structures and systems that are natural to it, and you can have a forest that has a bunch of old trees, but it is not true old growth.
Right. An old growth forest not only has large trees and big trees, it has trees of many ages. It has dead trees, both standing as snags and old trees that have died and fallen to the ground. And all of those components help create the habitat complexity that many species need to thrive, including many endangered species that rely on old-growth redwood forests, like the marbled murrelet and the northern spotted owl.
In total biomass, Emily, is the amount of redwood growing year by year? Have we reached a point where what is being cut sustainably?
Well, our work has been primarily to study forests that are protected, and much of the old growth today is protected. What we know from our research into those forests is that old growth forests today are actually growing faster than they ever have. They're responding to changes in climate, in our environment, and we're seeing higher rates of wood production than we have in many centuries of these trees' lifetimes. So that's really good news that redwoods are still thriving in today's climate, and it gives us even more impetus to want to go in and help accelerate the growth of our logged forests so that they can be sequestering carbon, adding to this rich carbon storage of California and Southern Oregon so that we can help combat climate change through our restoration.
We are talking about the Redwoods Rising Project here on the Jefferson Exchange. Emily Burns is Director of Science for the Save the Redwoods League. Jay Chamberlain is the Chief of the Natural Resources Division for California State Parks, also involved in the project. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it seems like the key phrase here is accelerate growth. And what is the proposition here, Emily? What's the plan?
The plan is to go in and find areas of the redwood forest ecosystem where we can eliminate the obstacles that the forests are facing to recover into old growth conditions. Sometimes that means helping to shift the forest composition back to redwood. What was historically a redwood-dominated forest in some places has been converted to a Douglas fir forest. After the original harvest, there were aerial seeding of Douglas fir seeds. So we can help accelerate the growth of redwood trees by removing the Douglas firs that were added to the landscape. We're also looking to heal the extensive network of logging roads that were put into these logged forests and now threaten salmon-bearing streams by releasing sediment into the waterways. So road removal, forest thinning are two of the major activities that we'll be using through Redwoods Rising.
Jabe Chamberlain, how fragmented are the old-growth redwoods already protected? I know just in terms of ownership, it seems like as you drive up 101, you can leave the state park, enter the national park, and vice versa, and you're never quite sure who owns the redwoods around you. But is it a fairly fragmented landscape?
It really is. And the groves that have been protected in the old-growth forests, a lot of that happened early in the 20th century, in the 1920s. At least the state parks that were set aside as part of the Redwood National and State Park Complex were set aside in the 20s. And in effect, the lands around them continued to be harvested and logged until some of those were protected many decades later. So what appears to be sort of a contiguous landscape is often that second growth and even third growth landscape in many cases. So this effort is really about reconnecting those old growth groves by restoring those previously harvested landscapes, as Emily has described.
And State Parks is one of the signatories to a memorandum of understanding executed about a month ago. Who else is in, Jay, besides State Parks and Save the Redwoods League?
It is the National Park Service. It's just a three-party agreement at this point. And really what we're talking about is the landscape, the 120,000 acres of Redwood National and State Parks. So it's the two landowners, if you will, of that landscape, as well as our good partner with Save the Redwoods League.
All right. We have a call here from Chris in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Redwoods Rising with Jay Chamberlain and Emily Burns. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hi. I just had a couple comments. One of them was regarding the when you talk about an old-growth forest, you talk about old-growth forest characteristics. I was taught that Doug fir actually reach maturation and old-growth characteristics, at a much younger age than, say, redwoods. And then number two, my other comment, I always thought that if you're trying to get a forest to have the old-growth characteristics, one of those characteristics, at least in our area, is, the large lateral branches that might be able to support marble bearlet nests or that kind of thing. And I wondered if any research had been done into, basically topping younger redwoods, younger large redwoods, to speed up the, development of those lateral branches.
Okay, you clearly studied this a lot. Thanks for the questions, Chris. Appreciate that. So, Emily, let's talk about the first part of that, the idea that Douglas fir ecosystems would seem to reach old growth faster. Is that any help in what you're trying to do?
Well, Douglas fir absolutely can develop very similar structures in old trees as redwoods, and it can happen very quickly. Generally, Douglas fir doesn't live as long as redwoods. So older trees often, at that end of the maturity curve, do have large branches. Douglas fir is also more susceptible to rot in the woods, so you can get the development of cavities that birds might nest in or other mammals. So it is a really important point, and Douglas fir will absolutely be nurtured as part of the restoration effort. The only places where we'd be seeking to lessen the density of Douglas firs in places where way too many young Douglas firs are established.
So we're talking about potentially some thinning projects. Are we even talking about logging some mature trees?
Well, not the way we describe mature trees, no. We wouldn't be looking to remove any mature trees. But we are looking to reduce the density in critical areas, especially where we have some larger trees already established and growing well. We can lessen the competition around them and help accelerate the growth of those largest trees, and that's always our goal.
To Chris's other question about needing to have sideways wood essentially out there in an old growth forest, you know, places for marbled murrelets, et cetera, to do some nesting and roosting, how much do you want to help things along? I mean, how much does the acceleration process include doing things that mimic old growth structures like that?
It's such a great comment. And there's a new paper that came out this year looking at exactly that. Dr. Steven Stillett from Humboldt State University has done an experiment to understand in those largest mature coast redwood trees, if you take off the very tip top of a tree or tip the branches, can you stimulate the growth of reiterated trunks, the development of those larger limbs that, as the caller described, create those platforms for nesting? And he found out that he absolutely can. In just 3 years' time, after doing some of these clipping treatments, he was able to initiate the different kind of shoot growth that will eventually turn into the type of wildlife structures that imperiled bird species specifically need. So this is really exciting. What's critical here is that we first help the trees get large. They need to be large enough trees for them to be candidates for this second level of treatment, which would be helping to initiate these wildlife structures. So we see this as the future in redwoods rising down the road. Once we're able to grow a larger forest in these logged areas, then we can continue to develop habitat structures. And this is really exciting. It's really the cutting edge of coast redwood restoration.
Emily, was redwoods rising born of an observation that perhaps things weren't happening as fast as you had wanted, or that you thought was going to happen?
Well, it really came from the concept that the track record of restoration in the park through the research that had been done was successful. We saw that the treatments that both National Park and California State Parks have been doing were working. So we came together and said, all right, we have the scientific basis for this. We have a compelling ecological need. And by leveraging our public and private resources, we now can scale up that effort and do restoration across this landscape in a really well-coordinated way with more capacity.
Jay Chamberlain at California State Parks, what are the specific areas where work is likely to happen soonest?
So we're looking to get started in two watersheds in California State Parks in Del Norte Coast Redwoods, specifically the Mill Creek watershed, mm-hmm. and then in Redwood National Park in the Prairie Creek watershed, a little bit to the south of that. So these are two areas that have been identified as priorities for undertaking some of these restoration actions. And in some cases, we've already made some steps down the road of planning those efforts. And so what we're doing through this partnership is really getting the synergy of the three parties working together, identifying a robust strategy, you know, to secure our permits, to share information, best practices, and techniques, and in some cases, you know, staffing resources and other types of resources.
Mill Creek in particular seems to have gotten a lot of love over recent years. What's the current status of the project up there?
Well, we're sort of ending an initial phase where we were really focused on sort of the first step of treating the really densely packed Douglas fir and removing some of the initial highest priority roads. And now we're taking a step back in this partnership and really creating the plan for the next set of restoration work. So there's still over 200 miles of road in that 25,000 acre area that need to be treated in some way, and many acres of Doug fir still to be treated.
And are you guys looking for corridors of connectivity from grove to grove? And if so, how skinny or wide can those be?
You know, ultimately, it's you know, rather than focusing on a narrow sort of band of connectivity, we're really taking the widest possible lens, the widest possible angle to restore large patches of connected acres between these groves. So, you know, some of the details we're candidly still working out, but I know our objective is going to be to do the widest possible pieces of restoration that we can in order to ensure that long-term sustainability.
Well, you have three entities that are certainly capable of at least raising money, if not have some on hand, the national parks, the state parks, and Save the Redwoods League. Emily, how much is this going to cost, and what's the overall timeline for Redwoods Rising?
Well, we have a bold vision to get up and going over the next 5 years, where we plan to treat 10,000 acres of logged redwood forest with the first restoration treatments across both the watersheds that Jay mentioned, Mill Creek and the Prairie Creek watershed. To do this, it's going to require a lot of resources from each of the three partnerships, but we're seeking to raise more than $6 million of public and private funding to help us accelerate these early implementation treatments. But restoration isn't a one-time act. Redwoods Rising really is about healing this landscape and sustaining it long-term. So we're looking at this as a perpetual commitment to maintain the integrity of this iconic West Coast landscape. So it's going to be a heavy lift, and it's going to require many public and private resources brought to bear over years and decades.
I want to spend a few more minutes talking about Redwoods Rising with Emily Burns, the Director of Science for Save the Redwoods League, and Jay Chamberlain, the Chief of Natural Resources Division at California State Parks. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. It sounds like there's a lot of enthusiasm for the project, though, certainly here at the beginning, Emily.
We are really excited about it, and I think that this is helping so many, at least the local communities and the park professionals and Save the Redwoods League constituents, which are around the country, fulfill the original park vision for the North Coast here. When the 1978 Redwood Act expanded Redwood National Park, and when Mill Creek was added to Del Norte Redwoods State Park, that 25,000-acre watershed, parks faced a pivot where it was time to not just protect pristine open spaces, but really to tackle the difficult challenges of healing landscapes. And I think it's such an inspiring story to think that we can go into these iconic landscapes and return redwoods, the tallest trees in the world, to their grandeur. This is something that's going to benefit carbon storage, clean water, wildlife habitat, and human enjoyment. Generations from now, people will be able to walk through new forests that are towering above them, and I think we're all really excited to be a part of that.
So this really does sort of push things we've talked about accelerating the growth there, but rather than just saying, here's what we got, let's protect that, it's also saying, here's the other stuff we got that didn't necessarily need protection because it, you know, had been logged already, but let's make it look more like the other stuff.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And one thing that's so exciting for us is seeing how we can help a next generation of forest steward and forest professionals get engaged in this type of restoration work in the parks. We're working with students at Humboldt State University to bring them into the forest and work side by side with the park professionals to help be extra pair of hands as we need to collect data and prepare for this restoration work ahead of us. And our hope is that we can inspire a whole new generation to take pride in our parklands and the potential of doing restoration. So we can all share in that exciting future.
Jay Chamberlain, this is a process that's going to be fairly equipment intensive, I would think. So you're going to have some heavy equipment out there, even to like rip up the roads that they can no longer travel on when they're done. You're going to need some chainsaws out there to take out the heavy undergrowth and stuff. So this will be a fairly noisy and equipment intensive operation, I would think.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the good news is we've been at it for a while. Over the last 40 years, between us and the National Park Service, we've treated several thousands of acres. And so we've learned a thing or two about using equipment, but also using it in these really sensitive habitats in ways that's really restoration oriented rather than extractive oriented. So I think the good news about this is that we've learned some lessons, we're applying them, and really through the partnership are going to be able to measure in a better way and kind of even sharpen our skills even more to really refine what those best practices are in this restoration ecology. And that's really exciting.
And from a visitor standpoint, Jay, what are you hearing from the folks on the customer service side? I mean, are trends moving upward? Are more people coming to see the trees in the redwoods?
Oh, absolutely. It is sort of a never flagging increase in visitation. And, you know, I think especially as more and more people become aware of not just how majestic these resources are, but how paradoxically how threatened they are in an era of climate change, I think it is really motivating people to kind of move off their good intentions and get check another box on their life list. And when the visitors come to these majestic groves, we're already working on helping message and helping educate them about, despite their grandeur, but for taking actions in the coming decades, they're actually somewhat threatened by all the converging challenges of climate change.
All the more reason to do it then, it sounds like, Emily.
Yeah, absolutely. And we hope that this project is a symbol of an effective partnership that can tackle restoration in a really complicated environmental landscape and serve as inspiration so that this can be replicated in other forests, not only throughout the Redwood Range, but a forest really across the country. Because it really, the future of taking care of our most precious forests is going to require both public and private participation. So we're going to champion this. We hope to share the lessons learned with everyone.
We will be checking in down the road as the project moves ahead. It's called Redwoods Rising. It combines national parks, state parks, and the Save the Redwoods League. Emily Burns is Director of Science for SRL. Jay Chamberlain, the Chief of the Natural Resources Division for California State Parks. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.